Welcome back to Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North. It's great to have you with us this morning. And it's also great to have Jean Creighton with us to talk about things astronomical as she does for us each month. Welcome, Jean.
Hello, Bonnie.
Great to see you again.
Great to see you.
It has been so hot. And we have all probably been thinking about cool things. We've been trying to imagine ourselves in maybe water.
Yes. How about the Mediterranean?
Yeah, that sounds good, with a cool drink. And of course, that makes us think about Neptune, the god of the sea.
It does.
Which, if we're thinking in terms of astronomical things, makes us think in terms of the planet Neptune.
Yes.
And that is going to be our subject today because there is a new moon around Neptune, is there not?
There is. There's been an announcement that there is a new moon that hasn't been named yet. Its current working name is S/2004N1, which
not
I'm sure
exactly
will change.
Poetical.
No, it will. I think they give throwaway assignments so that nobody will feel sorry to see that one go. It's probably less than 12 miles across, so that would be the smallest of the moons around Neptune. And it is 100 million times fainter than the faintest star you can see with the naked eye.
So, wow, you really can't see it.
You cannot. This was seen with the help of the Hubble Space Telescope going over data that has been gathered over the years in that vicinity. And the fact of the matter is that these are so small, so dark, it's coal black in how it reflects light, so it's really, really hard to see. People have to use all the tricks in the book to identify individual objects. And if because it's so small, investigators have to go back to other data and see if their model is correct of what its orbit is, then they should be able to find it again. And they were finding it again in data before the data that discovered the moon in the first place. So that's encouraging.
Now, how do we know it's a moon versus, say, an asteroid?
We don't know that. There could easily. I mean, we expect that some of the objects that are traveling around Neptune, any of the planets, you could have captured objects. So we're pretty confident, for example, that the two moons of Mars are probably captured asteroids. Now, in the case of Neptune, this is the smallest of all the objects that I mentioned. There is a large percentage of the 14 now moons of Neptune that are moving in what we call retrograde orbits. Some of them are also highly inclined. In other words, their orbit has a great angle with respect to the plane of Neptune around the sun. And also, their orbits are very elliptical. Those moons are likely not to have formed from the same goodies that Neptune did, but are likely to have been captured objects. So I have to say that I have a personal connection to Neptune.
Okay, what is it?
So in my mind, of course, it's Poseidon. So that's the Greek, Poseidon is the Greek version of Neptune, the original version of the god of the sea. And I have a very strong memory. In 1989, I was studying hard with a friend, and we heard somebody else talking about something they had seen on the television the night before. They had talked about this Voyager 2 that had flown by Neptune and had shown this amazing video, beautiful imagery of this blue sea-colored planet. And I thought to myself, I remember distinctly, wow, some people actually get to study that. Imagine that. So not much later, a few months later, I was talking with a professor. I was doing an undergraduate degree in physics at the University of Athens at the time. And I spoke to one of the professors there in the astronomy department. And apparently she thought it was a great idea to write a thesis on Neptune. So I got to work with all the articles that had come out from the Voyager 2 mission, and it sort of launched, in some ways, it launched my career. That's how I got really engaged with astronomy, because until then, although I was interested in astronomy, I didn't think that I would be able to become an astronomer, and that's what kind of clench the deal, as it were.
So we can thank Neptune.
We can thank Neptune.
For you
right.
Sitting right here and talking to us.
That's right.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So at that time, before Voyager 2 went to Neptune, we only knew of three of the moons of Neptune. We knew of Triton, and in fact, for quite a long time, and Proteus, and, well, I like the Greek word, Nereida.
That's pretty.
Yes, Nereida. So Nereida, unlike the other two that are sons, children of Neptune. According to mythology, Nereides was a whole class of sea creatures, and Neaves were the brook, river, sometimes near trees as well. But all these creatures were connected to water in some way. So those were the only three. And at the time before Voyager 2 data was analyzed, there was a large discussion about whether Neptune had rings or not. They knew from the data that they weren't complete rings. They looked more like sausages.
Okay. Yeah.
On a string, mm-hmm. as definite what they called ring arcs. So definitely thicker areas and almost nothing connecting to other thicker areas. So this was a great intriguing thing about Neptune that we really haven't seen anywhere else. It turns out that those really are ring arcs. In other words, there are ways of, for moons, we call them shepherd moons, to keep material not only confined in how broad it gets, but also how long it gets in the case of Neptune. But also in that debris, we found extra moons that we hadn't seen before. Because Voyager 2 got so close to Neptune, we were able to see many more moons. So that added five more to the mix. Can I tell you their names?
Yes, please, because I'm sure that they're just wonderful.
They're beautiful. And what can I say? I have two boys, so I couldn't give these names to them. But listen to this. Galatia, Vespina, Larissa, Thalassa. Thalassa, by the way, means sea in Greek. Neava.
They're beautiful.
Aren't they?
Yeah.
I think they're pretty awesome. So those were the five extras that we found. And then a few years passed, several years passed, in fact, before, from ground-based observations, we were able to find another group. But I feel that before we go on to those other five objects that are fairly small, I want to say something about Triton. Triton is the largest by far moon of Neptune. And what was very intriguing about it is that when we took pictures of the surface, it looked like there were some dark streaks. And people had no clue what those were. No idea. Eventually, we got lucky, and in one of the pictures, we saw some of the atmosphere almost in kind of like a cross-section, and it became clear that there was amount of material that's escaping the surface of Triton, and because it has winds, Triton has an atmosphere, which is unusual for a moon, but it does. It's a very large moon, and it seems the wind seems to trail that a plume a very long distance, several miles. So even from above, you can see that streak of material against the surface. Now, what's cool about this is that this is kind of like a cold volcano. So Triton has cracks on the surface. It has trapped methane and ammonia under it. When the crack goes to the surface entirely, clear to the pocket of methane that's there, it is a very cold world, so it's not going to be liquid, but it goes from frozen to gas. So you get these explosions, these plumes of material coming from the surface.
Wow. Well, literally coming from well below the surface.
Yeah, that's yeah, of course. That's what I mean. Yeah.
But wow.
So an active world, even though at the time we thought it was the coldest world in the solar system at 38 degrees above absolute zero. So to give you a sense of what that means, water at those temperatures is as hard as steel. And you can't guess based on properties on our planet. You can't guess what materials are going to be like on Triton because it's so cold, you need different models. There's a whole science that basically looks at what are the properties of materials if you take them to extremely cold environments. Triton would be a good lab for that. So, an extra group of moons were found. These were from ground-based observations, so from telescopes on Earth. They probably were scratching their heads. There is a whole committee that names objects to make sure that they're consistent with themes, but also to make sure that the name hasn't been used before. And that's a hard thing to do because there are a lot of asteroids, so a lot of names have been snapped up. But thankfully for us, some of the references, if you will, Homer, Hesiod, have whole lists of Nereids. So, we have some names for them. Now, these would be Psamathe. So, this is the goddess of sand. Niso, the goddess of islands. Alimivi is the lady of brine. Saul comes from the verb save, the equivalent of save in Greek. So that's, I think, since it's Greece is such a nautical country, there's always a tendency to please and flatter the gods so that your people who are at sea are safe. And Laomedeia, which is the leader of people. So that, with the new one, which I'm sure will be named within the next year or two, is a total of 14 for Neptune.
So far.
Indeed, so far. This does change. We could have more over time.
Well, Jean, it has been such a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Lake Effect contributor Jean Creighton is the director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium on the campus of UW-Milwaukee. She spoke to us this month about the moons of Neptune. We'll take one last break, and then we'll learn about a new quarterly poetry reading series that's taking place here in Milwaukee. So stick around. Lake Effect returns in just a moment on Milwaukee Public Radio.